This week on Art of the Air features Chrissy Nicholson and Melissa Dalton of the Great Lakes Sound Chorus discussing their upcoming activities. Next, we feature a full-spectrum content provider, Michael Feeney, whose body of work over his 20-year career includes music, audio, video, photography, and writing. Our spotlight's on Chicago Street Theater's holiday production of Twas the Night Before Christmas with director Sherry Nashbaum.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Chicago Street Theater. They have upcoming performances that are going to be over the holiday weekends, first opening over Thanksgiving weekend. And they're going to tell us all about it is Sherry Nashbaum. She is the director of that. And Sherry, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you for having me. I would like to give a shout out to my co-director, Abigail Johnson Allen. She's one of our new young and brightest, and I'm glad to have her on board as my right hand. I just really want to give her a shout out.
Beautiful.
Excellent. Well, you know, you're doing a show called Twas the Night Before Christmas. It's from a Ken Ludwig script. So why don't you go and tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, as I noticed, our artistic committee always was having trouble finding Christmas show directors. It's a tough time to do a show. And so I thought, you know, I don't have kids. I have a lot of free time. Let me see what's out there that I can throw into maybe the landscape. And the key was finding a small cast, so you're not dealing with all the different things that come up during the holidays. And I stumbled across this script by Ken Ludwig, and he's not known for family theater. He's known more for adult farce, like Lend Me a Tenor, that kind of stuff. So I read it, and I was just kind of enchanted by it. He says it's recommended for 3 to 13, but I laughed out loud several times. And so it's the story of young Emily and her friend Amos the Mouse. And they were skipped one Christmas, and they're not happy about it. So they're at a Christmas Eve party at Emily's house, and her uncle starts reading Twas the Night Before Christmas. And during this, Amos and Emily let him know just what's happened to them. And all of a sudden, from the North Pole arrives an elf who's investigating why this house was skipped one Christmas, and that begins the adventures. We also have some characters for Robin Hood. It's a script that you can't actually analyze a lot of motivation like you normally do a script. It's just a script that is a lot of fun, and I think the kids will love it. There's audience participation. I'm really anxious. It's the first time it's being done in the area. We've been trying to get it for a few years, and it had been being done in Chicago. But the theater, sadly, that was doing it up there did not survive the COVID shutdown. So it was a break for us to finally get the rights to do the show. And so I'm anxious to see how our market responds to it.
Well, I mean, look how it's advertised: a heist, a duel with rapiers, some hip hop, a squirt gun, a perilous airplane flight, and a secret agent elf. I mean, who would not want to go and enjoy that?
He's with the elf BI. And I just, like I said, he kind of does that thing that Disney does, is put enough in there for the adults so they won't be bored out of their minds, you know. But
very rollicking. So
it has been fun. Yes.
Sherry, now is your cast kids or are they adults?
No, it's an adult. I like working with adults doing shows for kids, especially with audience participation. You have to be able to get a handle on it. And I need adults for that. But the fun thing, I'm working with a totally new cast to me. Over the years, as you direct, you tend to sort of assemble a posse of people around you that you're used to working with. You've got a shorthand with them, kind of thing. But this show has been wonderful. I'm working with all new actors and actresses, and I couldn't have more fun. What they come up with every night just absolutely amazes me.
So, Sherry, are you also an actress as well as a director?
Oh, yes, yes. Combined, I probably have over 100 shows under my belt. I've spent the last 51 years with the Chicago Street Theater / prior to that was Community Theater Guild. But we've been Chicago Street Theater now for 25 years since we moved away from the Memorial Opera House. And before that, I was with a company called Onstage Incorporated, and we toured. We were adults touring with shows for children. They just make the best audience.
Well, before we talk about the dates for this show, you can also give us a preview of something you have coming up. Tell us about that. I think it's December 2nd, a classical blast because the Dark Side of the Yule. Tell us a little about that.
Yes. My husband also produces a concert series for Chicago Street Theater. And every year when we're doing our holiday production, we run up against holidays downtown, and downtown parking in Valpo is a nightmare. So we normally have our concerts on Sunday night, but we scheduled this one for Friday, December 2nd at 8 p.m. So it will be the same night as holidays, but it will be an hour after all the festivities are over. And we're hoping this works to even introduce a new audience to this wonderful group. They do a fusion of classic rock with classic Christmas, and it's wonderful.
Well, tell us quickly about the show dates and everything for Chicago Street Theater.
Well, there's a whole myriad, so people can see them all on our website. That opens Friday, November 25th. We close Sunday, December 18th, and there's a myriad of times and performances, Saturday matinees, Saturday early evenings.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. That's Sherry Brown Nash, Chicago Street Theater, and it's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. ChicagoStreet.org is where you can find out more information. Sherry, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Sunshine, second is rain, third is the roses that bloom in the lane.
we would like to welcome Chrissy Nicholson and Melissa Dalton to Art on the Air. Melissa and Chrissy are part of the Great Lakes Sound Chorus, a regional chapter of Sweet Adelines. Great Lakes Sound Chorus is filled with women who love singing in harmony, from classic barbershop style to modern a cappella arrangements. They currently have 40 active members. Chrissy and Melissa, thank you for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. I'm so excited to hear how all of you got together.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Well, I guess we'll start with Beth because she's the marketing chair for the organization and in there. And you can tell us a little bit about your personal biography. I always like to say, you know, like where you grew up and everything, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So Chrissy, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So I am Chrissy Nicholson. I am the membership coordinator for Great Lakes Sound Chorus. We have a lot of events coming up for membership that I'd love to tell you about a little later, but we have, like you were saying, 40 members in the chorus that are all so welcoming. I joined last year, so it's just been a really wonderful ride, and I'm glad to call Great Lakes Sound Chorus my home.
Didn't I read you said that it was the family you didn't think, I mean, the family that you didn't know that you really needed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I moved from Indianapolis to the Northwest Indiana region, and I just didn't have a lot of friends up here. I was really like lonely. So it was really nice to meet a group of like-minded individuals that was just super welcoming and open arms. It was just really great. I really needed it at the time. So very lucky.
Well, Chrissy, we want to go back in time a little bit, like where you actually grew up, where you went like to schools and everything like that. So give us that kind of history. That's what we want to hear, is your origin story.
Yeah, kind of like, absolutely. Have you always loved singing?
I have. So I am actually from Fishers, Indiana, so in the Indianapolis area. And I was in choir my whole K through 12 career, from a wee lass to a senior in high school. And I performed a little bit in college, but kind of fell out of it. And when I moved up here, I lived up here for a couple of years before I started searching for any kind of musical outlet. And that's how I found GLS.
And college, where'd you go to college and study, and what did you study?
Yeah, for sure. I went to IUPUI and I was in the Kelley School of Business. I graduated with a marketing degree with a dual major in international studies.
Excellent. And what brought you to Northwest Indiana?
So it's kind of a funny story, but the long and short of it is my husband works up here. And it was just easier to move up here instead of having him work remotely. So,
excellent. Well, we'll move on to Melissa, who's the assistant director for the group. And same thing, we want to hear about your origin story, like where you grew up, where you go, the whole thing. So Melissa, share your story.
Sure. Well, I'm originally not from Indiana. I grew up in central Illinois, so kind of around the Champaign-Urbana area. I have been a music lover my whole life. I'm pretty familiar with barbershop style, which is kind of what we do in Sweet Adelines. My grandfather was in a barbershop harmony society chorus. So I kind of grew up listening to that, and it was a lot of fun. It was something I always was interested in doing, but barbershop harmony society at the time did not accept female members. And so I went the Sweet Adelines route instead. And so that's kind of how I found the chorus. But like I said, I grew up just always loving music. I was a band nerd all through school. I was in choir all through school, even up through college. I was involved with the music department at my college. I went to Olivet Nazarene University. I was a music major for a while, but ultimately graduated with an English degree, and just have always loved singing and just music in general. As I think probably many adults who perform or who have been involved in these kind of organizations know, you know, once you get out of school and you move and you kind of settle someplace for a new job or for your post-schooling life, it's a little harder to find organizations or, you know, just groups to be a part of like you had those opportunities for in school. So I was thrilled when I found that Sweet Adelines had a chapter close to our house here in Valparaiso, we're Northwest Indiana. And I went and checked it out, and it was just the nicest group of women I think I've ever met in my life. And so that kind of sucked me in right away. And I joined in 2015, in the summer of 2015. And just got to know everybody very quickly. And like Chrissy said, it really very quickly felt like a family. And, you know, anything you need, someone's going, oh, well, can I help you with that? Or, you know, they'll knock on your door and here, I brought you a casserole or something like that. So it's just, it's been a wonderful group of people to get to know. And I very much agree. It's very much like a family for us too.
So I'm going to do a Larry question now. So it was with the singing background, this is for both of you. Did you do musical theater in high school, or, I mean, did your singing show up in that aspect?
For me, it did. Absolutely. I was in pretty much anything I could do along those lines, band, choir, but also definitely performing theater, musical theater. Anytime my high school had some kind of a show like that, a play or a musical or something, I was one of the first people to sign up to audition for something. It didn't matter to me what, I just wanted to be. So, yes.
Yeah. Melissa, what was your instrument?
When I was in band, well, I've dabbled with a lot of different kinds of instruments, but primarily I played the trumpet. I also played a little bit of piano, and I dabbled with some percussion and some things like that too. So
I played trumpet also, and I had a trumpet instructor that would not teach women because it was a masculine instrument. Of course, this was in the late 60s, early 70s. So, but he, you know, he did not believe in women trumpet players. So I'm always glad. Okay. I'm glad to see that broken through. So Chrissy, since you're the marketing director, maybe you have the answer to this, but if not, Melissa can jump in. Maybe our audience doesn't understand what the Sweet Adelines are. I mean, it's you know, not only just your group, which is part of it, but explain the whole thing behind what the Sweet Adelines are.
Yeah, so Sweet Adelines is an international organization that has different chapters in different locations. And Melissa, jump in. I don't remember how many chapters there are internationally, but there are 23 different regions. Will you correct me on that?
There are 35 regions 35. Total. Mm-hmm. We have members all across Northern America, so the United States, Canada. We also have some choruses that are in Europe, in different places. I think there's some in the UK.
Japan is
France.
One.
Yes, Japan. We have some as well. There are also members in choruses in Australia and New Zealand. So we're pretty widespread. There are just lots of different local chapters too. So anybody who is curious about finding one that's close to them, there's a really cool search function on the Sweet Adelines International website where you can just kind of pop in and type in your zip code and find the closest one to you. And if there's not one close to you, then you can talk to them about starting one in your area or lots of different resources like that.
Yeah. And it's so kind of set up sorority style. So there is the overarching organization with different chapters, but it's not really like a sorority.
Well, I was wondering about that. So what kind of freedom do you have within your own chapters, or is how much is dictated from the, you know, the mother group?
So there are just overall some organizational, you know, rules and guidelines that each chapter follows individually. But each chapter is very much encouraged to make their own chapter rules and standing guidelines and things as well. So in some cases, the overall organization would defer to the chapter rules, just depending on the subject and things along those lines. But overall, Sweet Adelines International will kind of just set the overall guidelines for what to expect with the chorus, or, you know, if you're planning to set up a chapter of your own, then they have some things that you need to consider or that you need to do to be an official part of the organization that way.
Who choreographs? So I'm very curious about the costuming, because with 40 women and all those sparkles, how does that come about? Is there certain things you have to choose from, or do you have complete freedom in how you present yourself?
So that's actually changing a little bit, which is nice. The rules for things like makeup, nail polish are actually lightening up a little bit, which I know some people like and some people don't, but that's the nature of any decision, right? So, and you said something about choreography, and I want to throw that over to Melissa because she actually does our choreography, so she can answer that a little better than I can. Mm-hmm.
So some of the staging that we do in general, it just kind of depends on the show. We, as Sweet Adelines, one of the things we do every year is we actually have regional competitions. And so every year, one of our big goals as a chorus is we work towards our competition season, which is always in the early spring, usually sometime between April and May. And every chorus that is in our region that is part of Sweet Adelines International will come together and perform a set for a competition. Usually it's a slower song called a ballad, and then we'll do something that's a little faster tempo called an uptune. And then we have judges who come in and they will kind of grade our performance based on what we did and how well we executed those songs and, you know, just along the guidelines of things like showmanship or visual communication. So it would be things like staging and if you have any choreography or just overall how well you kind of present that part of it on stage, things like expression. So how well you kind of share the overall meaning and message of the song and how well you kind of emote that for your audience. The music choices themselves in terms of, are they a good fit for your chorus? Is it something that's not too challenging for you to perform, but not too easy as well? And then of course, sound is a big part of it for them too, with, you know, how does it sound? Is it in tune? Is it something that, you know, can you hear all the parts? Is it evenly balanced? You know, different things along those lines. But yeah, so choreography is a little bit of it, but it's a small part in comparison to the overall thing.
So do you want to share some of your accolades?
Sure. What would you like to know?
Well, no. Just talk about some of your awards and how you've been, you know, in these competitions, you are steadily improving all the time. So,
yes. So most recently this year, things have been a little strange because of the pandemic. But this year we did have a competition, but it was a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. Because of the pandemic, and we're just trying to keep all of our members safe, both locally and kind of across the board, our region opted to do a virtual competition. So what we did was we performed ours and recorded it ahead of time on just video, and then we sent it, and then our group of judges was able to watch it together live, and then they did their judging that way. And everything was very fair. We made sure that Sweet Adelines International overall just made sure we had a really good set of rules in place for how that was allowed to be done. And because it is a little bit different, you know, when you go on stage, when you're live, you only get one opportunity to put your stuff out there. You know, you don't get to do it four or five times until you feel like you've done the perfect performance. And so it's a little bit different to do it live on stage, but we had some really great rules in place and the judges were very fair and they always get good training ahead of time just to make sure everything is as it should be. And we were very excited this year when we won first place in our division. So we won our division overall there. And then we received fourth place overall in the whole competition. So yeah,
congratulations.
Now, our audience may not really realize, we talked about choreography and everything else, but what's the kind of music you do? What's the style? I mean, we briefly touched on it, but you hear Sweet Adelines. Well, what is it? So like, explain to the audience what exactly you guys do when you're actually singing.
So what we do when we're singing is it's a four-part harmony structure. So any kind of song that can be written that way is something that we'll sing. So things more contemporary, like Melissa said, things like musical pieces from shows like The Greatest Showman. We sing A Million Dreams from that show, to Beatles songs, to just different types of music. Sorry.
Well, and I think the one thing is that it's a cappella. You're unaccompanied. I think that's probably an important part of the Sweet Adelines. It's because when you got to start, somebody has to have the mouth harp to get everyone in tune there.
Yes, absolutely. And that is a big piece of it, is being able to find your note from the pitch pipe for sure.
So Sweet Adelines, in addition to it being a cappella, something that probably a lot of people don't know is that Sweet Adelines has its history. Its roots is basically in the barbershop style. So like Chrissy said, it is that four-part harmony. We, because of our particular chorus, we have mainly sopranos and altos who sing with us. But the music is written, if you look at it on a page, it would say tenor, lead, baritone, bass. So it's written in what some people would look at that and go, oh, well, these are men's parts, but they're the way it's voiced, it's for, you know, you'll see a lot of SSAA, so soprano one, soprano two, alto one, alto two type of voicings. So a lot of those kinds of things. But the barbershop style is great for that. It can be sung with men's voices, women's voices, just kind of a range across the board there. So although we say barbershop, a lot of people usually think of just men's arrangements, you know, it's really not just for the men. And a cappella, as Chrissy said, you know, we've got a lot of different options with modern arrangements. We've got songs. We have sung in the past some Meghan Trainor songs. We've sung some Bruno Mars. We've also done some older arrangements of just different standards. We've done, like she said, the Beatles, just different things like that. So there's a pretty wide variety there, which is something I personally feel like there's a little bit of something in there for everybody.
So which Beatles song did you do?
Well, we've done a few. Most recently, we've been singing In My Life, and we've also been singing Blackbird.
Oh, nice.
That would be great. And who picks your music?
Our fabulous director, Carol Thompson, she and our music team, they talk a lot about just different arrangements for things. And she'll come to the music team with ideas for songs that she likes. And as a group, the music team will talk about whether or not they like it and, you know, what they like about it and what they don't. So there's a little bit of a committee that happens there. But ultimately, Carol has the final say on what we'll sing.
How often do you rehearse?
Carol is our wonderful director.
Yeah. How often do you rehearse?
Every Tuesday, we rehearse at 6:30 every Tuesday night at First Presbyterian in Valparaiso.
Very good.
And we would love to see you there.
Yes. Now, do you recruit? Are you looking for a recruitment of new members?
Absolutely. So we are always looking for new performers who want to join. If you have a soprano or alto voice, we would love to see you. We actually have a membership night coming up on October 18th, if you would like to visit us there. We will have a lot of different things going on, but the main gist of it is you will see how a rehearsal typically runs, but you'll also get some social time to meet with the wonderful people in the chorus, like we were talking about. That's really what it's all about, is the lifelong friendship that we forge through this musical connection. So we would love to see you there. If you join us for the membership drive, you'll have a chance to sing with us at our biggest event, which is our dinner auction, which will be on November 13th. And we would love to have you there, whether you want to sing with us or not. We'd love to see you.
and can they, like, let's say they can't make October 18th, they could drop in on another rehearsal maybe. Maybe it's not quite as
absolutely
right to get doing. Beyond November, what do you have? Do you have anything else on the calendar for that? Or have you planned that far ahead? Your competition upcoming? Or
Go ahead, Chrissy.
Oh, I was just going to say, that is basically what we jump right into after that is contest prep. So that is where our heads will be until the competition is over.
We do also have some other things. We like to be out in the community, especially during the holiday season. So if you have an upcoming holiday party of any type and you are looking for some music, you can always give us a call. And we are available to perform at those kinds of events.
As a quartet or as a 40s.
Any combination.
Whatever
of that,
you need.
So yeah, we can do a smaller group or the full chorus if you prefer, or we do have some smaller quartets that are available if you prefer just a small group that way. We also like to be out in the community a little bit, so it's not uncommon at all for you to see us out doing some holiday caroling in some way at lots of the local, I think, Holidays downtown Valparaiso. We usually go there, and we've got some other local festivals and things that we like to go to as well. So sometimes we will be out and about for Valentine's Day as well. So if you need kind of a singing telegram or something like that for your sweetheart on Valentine's Day, that's an option too. So.
Do any of your members participate in other types of groups also? I mean, I would imagine with that much talent, they may not just do Sweet Adelines. Do they do other things as far as you know?
Musical theater, like? Yeah. Is that what you're hinting at?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
We do, actually.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There are members who are in musical theater. We have members who participate in open mic nights or karaoke. Really just any excuse to get out in front of people and promote the chorus and have fun at the same time.
That sounds great. What else are you looking forward to with the group doing? I mean, we talked a little bit about your competition. What's involved in the process? You go to like a, I don't know, sectional, regional, and eventually national and international? So how does that work?
Ultimately, yes, that's our goal. So you do have the regional competitions where the local folks will come and sing. And then those who win overall, if those competitions are invited then to go to the international competition. So usually if your score at the regional competition is high enough, sometimes you'll get an extra invitation. So you'll usually have the overall winner who will be invited. And then sometimes you'll have a wild card chorus that will also be invited. And so the international competition is actually for competing quartets who have won the quartet competition regionally. And then the choruses that have won the regional event as well, they'll come together and they will compete for an overall international winning title. So,
so as part of your chorus, do you have quartets?
We do.
Within that? And do you compete as quartets?
You can, yes. It's up to you. We have some quartets that sing just for fun, and we also have some that are interested in competing. So ultimately, the goals are kind of up to the individual quartet members, kind of what they would like to do. But yeah, there is a division specifically for quartet competition. And then if you just want to do kind of a pickup quartet, just sing together on a Tuesday night for fun, or just sing in a small group at one of our shows or something like that, those are also options.
Your first place win, what happens next then?
Well, we are also with our first place win this year, we were very proud to discover that we scored the highest we have ever scored as a chorus. So that's a new personal goal for us. Next year, we are hoping we can score even higher. And ultimately, someday, we would love to get an invitation to the international competition for our division. So that's kind of what we're shooting for long term. You know, we just always strive to do better every year, too.
Now, tell me what some of the tasks you have to do as assistant director.
Kind of anything my director needs help with, I'm happy to do. I help just kind of with the planning of some of the things. We talk a lot about staging and how to kind of present each song. I have helped run rehearsals and just kind of get things organized for her. There's just a lot we do behind the scenes. You know, we talk a lot about the kinds of music we're interested in and kind of set some goals together for the next year and things along those lines. I have directed some as well. And so kind of just, there's a lot, but I love doing it. It's a pleasure and an honor to be the assistant director.
Probably. She wears a lot of hats, but she wears them very well.
probably like a music librarian. We've got just about a minute left, so we'll toss it to either one of you to kind of review, like, website information, Facebook page, other social media, and just review everything else, dates that you have coming up.
Absolutely. So some of those dates were listed before for the membership drive. That was October 18th. Is your next chance to come to a big fancy event. But if you want to join any rehearsal, you are more than welcome to join us. We rehearse in Valparaiso at 6:30 p.m. and it usually goes until about 9:30. Our website is glschorus.org. You can find all the information you need on there. And we are Great Lake Sound Show Chorus on Facebook. So we would love to see you. And guys, thank you for having us on today. We really appreciate it.
Well, we really appreciate it. And Melissa, you had something else real quick?
Yes, just one more thing. If you have any questions about any of these dates or you'd like to order tickets for the show or anything along those lines, you can email us at glschorus@gmail.com.
Okay, very good.
Perfect.
Well, we'd like to thank from the Great Lakes Sound Chorus, we have Chrissy Nicholson and Melissa Dalton. And thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us all about this Sweet Adeline's group right in our neighborhood.
Yeah, completely wonderful. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
We would like to welcome Michael Finney to Art on the Air. Michael is a full-spectrum content producer from the Midwest. He has explored music,
audio, video, photography, and writing over a 20-year career that has taken him across the United States as well as overseas. Thank you, Michael, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome to you.
Hey, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
It's a pleasure.
Looking forward to talking with you guys, and I'm glad that it worked out schedule-wise.
It sure is. Well, Michael, we really want to know about your origin story, and I always like to tee that up, is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
So, you know, I grew up around the Chicagoland, you know, have family in other places like Pittsburgh and out on the East Coast. I lived there for a few years. But I think really kind of the beginning of the stuff that I'm working on now probably started with music and bands and things like that, and just needing to solve the creative problems you run into in terms of like the technology that you use and the methods to distribute whatever it was that you're creating, whether it was, you know, music or promotions for concerts or, you know, creating videos and things like that to help open up doors with booking agents and stuff like that. So it just, I think, expands out of that. If you have done audio editing, video editing is not a huge leap. In terms of, like, you know, my era of doing this digitally was software, right? When it was all outboard hardware, it's a much more specialized craft, I think. I mean, I took radio and television production in college, and what you learned there was great in terms of working with a crew, but in terms of, you know, working with technology and producing and kind of the modern workflows, it's all software. And so over the years, you know, I kind of got less and less invested into creating new music and more into like photography and traveling and creating little kind of video vignettes of things that, you know, were interesting to me. And a lot of times that's just kind of about the process and not really about the audience for me, you know. So what becomes product or what becomes exposition is really hard to determine at the beginning of things, I think. So, you know, like the creating documentaries, making videos, and doing audiobooks and books kind of was birthed out of that. And that's just, you know, where I am now.
Did you do so that as a growing up? Did you do anything as you were younger, you know, run around with a little camcorder and do things?
No, or,
no, not at all.
No, no theater, no theater in high school or.
I know that sounds weird, but I performed a lot of like with music. I was on stage from the time I was like 14.
Okay. And what kind of music did you do?
Yeah. All kinds, really. I played in jazz band. I played in metal bands. I played in acoustic bands and symphonic band and orchestra and all kinds of stuff.
How did you segue into like special events? Because, and this is like your, and this is like speaking in your past, I guess, but, and doing special events. So how did you wind up in that realm?
I'm not exactly sure, to be honest with you. I think that, again, it's really just like a matter of problem solving. So you have to learn these things over time.
Okay. Well, you were talking about some of the nuts and bolts of what you're doing. I know that actually my degrees, even though my life is in theater, I is in both radio television production, actually from Purdue, then Cal. But that was also the tape era in the 90s and earlier. So. But I know what you mean about how digital editing, both audio and everything with Premiere and everything, is much easier in some ways. So you're pretty much self-taught. Did you learn really that, I mean, on your own and before you started developing whatever the content was? You know, you kind of need to know the nuts and bolts if you're going to do that.
Yeah, like I said, I took radio and television production in college, but I had already been doing that stuff
right
on my own for a number of years. So it was basically kind of just shoring up some of the technical things that I didn't know, or some of the processes and hardware that you use for traditional production and access to things that obviously, like as a student, you know, or as a young person, you're not going to be buying a TV studio to produce videos. You're going to have a camera and a piece of software and try and make the best out of it.
Now, you spoke of photography, so tell us a little bit about that, because that we'll talk about your work, how it appears in some of your publications, but tell us about photography.
So I was working for some print publications, like in college, and I would go and do like band reviews or locational reviews of stuff, and they would, you know, have a photographer go out. Sometimes, you know, they were at the event, but sometimes they weren't, or they would go and photograph a place later. And it's like, okay, well, that really holds up, you know, my publishing process. So now I'm going to take my own photos. So that really kind of opened up a lot of different things. And then I worked for a media company, print publication. It was like a bar and nightlife entertainment publication. So worked there for a number of years, and would go out to, you know, 100 locations a month and photograph people. And we worked with radio and television to produce spots and promotions and things like that. And, you know, getting a DSLR, you know, 15 years ago or whatever, all of a sudden you're like, well, what else can I photograph with this? As opposed to just, you know, the work stuff, and start to get more interested in it. I'm not a great technical photographer. I don't know about f-stops and aperture and all this stuff. I'm familiar with the terms and I can apply the thinking, but at the same time, really, for me, it's about just kind of like putting yourself there and, you know, finding a good angle and the processing afterwards, the post-production things that you do.
Sure. And of course, as a photographer, I always ask this question, Canon or Nikon?
Oh, Canon, you know, but at the same time, like, I think it really kind of doesn't matter. If you like one thing, then use that brand. And if you get comfortable with it and all of your stuff is Nikon or Canon, then you're probably not going to switch. Whatever you got first is probably the one you're going to keep rolling with, because the parts are more interchangeable, I guess, you know.
They're completely, that's the thing, is it's kind of a legacy, is you you're using the same materials over and over again. And the lenses are the biggest reason to stick with the brand, because if you're getting to, like, in Canon, the L series lenses, you know, those puppies are expensive enough as it is. So, yeah. And both of them need to watch out for Sony. Sony's going to come up from the rear. They already have in many ways. So, and it's a much larger corporation. So anyway,
definitely.
Well, I'm going to talk about the Chicago Expo. So when did you, with all the subjects in the world to write a book about, how did you wind up 1893, the Chicago Expo?
So I think that a lot of people in their effort to be creative, you know, are always looking for ideas, or they're trying to find something. And it's kind of like, to me, you know, just start with what you have and, go from there. So I had come up on a book of the old official fair photographs by Charles Arnold. The book is called The Dream City, and his photos are in a ton of publications from back in the day. Just so happens that I got this one, and it's a huge book of maybe, I guess, like 300 some odd photos, maybe 400 photos in there. And, you know, they were the photos that he was tasked with taking in preparation of the event and during the event. And I just thought they were really cool and wanted to start sharing them as well, because I had sent them to a few friends, and all those people were like, oh, these are really cool. These are cool. So, you know, it was like, well, more people should see this stuff. So I started a long form Twitter thread, and over the course of 125 days, over the last 125 days of 2018, which was the 125th anniversary, I published a photo and a little blurb every day. And that kind of snowballed, became the book, and then became the documentary. And then, you know, now we are working on extended reality stuff. So if you've looked at, like, Instagram or Facebook, you can pull up one of our buildings that we have re-rendered. And I got to do a couple updates to that. I need to clean up some stuff, but I'm just happy that they approved it. You know, next version, I'm going to add some music to it and fix some of the ambient lighting. You know, I'm not a pro with augmented reality. I'm learning as I go. So it's, you know, you stumble a little bit every once in a while, or don't necessarily know how to solve problems rapidly, or see that you made an error that you didn't even know, you know, you were not even aware that that was an option or whatever. So
Michael, yeah. Do you use a production team at all, or are you do this all by yourself?
No, there are people helping me, obviously. But in terms of the project, you know, really it is kind of, you know, my thing in the sense that like all the other stuff is under my name. But in terms of augmented reality, there's a lot of heavy lifting there, and I am not knowledgeable or educated enough to solve all those problems on my own. So I've been very lucky to get input and help from folks that are far more knowledgeable and experienced than me.
When you approach a project, now let's take your 1893 Chicago Columbian Exposition, that developed into a book and into like a short film. One of the questions I also had, did you do the voiceover yourself?
Yes, actually. So the audiobook, while I was recording the audiobook version, I was thinking about how it was going to become the voiceover for the documentary. So I read it as it would be needed for the documentary too. And there were a couple of things, you know, I learned along the way doing that about the event, like factually, some stuff had to be cleaned up. And also I came into a few additional assets and had more time to do more photography. So there are some things in the documentary, you know, that are not in the book. Even though I did go back and release a second edition to put some of that stuff in there, you know, some of it just doesn't fit or, you know, whatever. But the documentary is a little more in-depth. You know, there's maybe like 5% more information in the documentary, but also there's a couple of factual tweaks just to make sure that I am getting things right for the academic historian. Which is important too. You know, I want this to be, you know, historically accurate, but I like some of the fun kind of esoteric stuff that floats around the Columbian Exposition too.
Sure. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Now, you have some newer projects that you've run. Well, first of all, something that's completely outside of that is how to create a personal brand in 10 steps, and that's one. But you have two books about exploring our national parks. And, of course, in Northwest Indiana now we have a national park. So tell us about those projects.
So a couple of years back, I started traveling and going to national parks. And I do that, you know, on my own or with friends or with family. And, you know, it was part of that push to get more into photography and just kind of exploring, you know, how to capture those landscapes. Cause I had shot people, you know, with the camera for so long that it was just kind of like, I was like burnt out with it. And it was like, well, you know, what else is there? Architecture and landscapes. And, you know, they're, a totally different subject and a different challenge. And I think that, you know, the thing that I learned there is, you know, you, again, put yourself there, but also you might put yourself there and it's not like the optimum time or conditions aren't right or whatever. You're like, wow, I wish I was here at this time because then the light would be doing that. And it's like, okay, well, you know, when am I ever going to be able to manufacture that scenario? You know, this is the best that I can do. I am here. I will capture this. Perhaps I am back again at some point and we'll do that again. But yeah, the national park stuff, yeah, it's good. Again, I do, you know, the writing and the layout and convert that stuff into videos. I do the audio book. And I think that what a lot of people might not understand is that, you know, you mentioned the How to Create a Personal Brand project, and that was actually the first one of these projects that was started. But because of just the nature of what I was trying to do with it, initially my draft included references to a lot of other people and projects. And I was like, well, you know, what happens if these people or these projects disappear or there's some, you know, whatever that occurs with it. And then I, you know, need to change these things. So I said, you know what, I'm going to create these other two projects and then come back to this one so that I can reference these projects, you know, under my own name inside of this, make it very integrated. And that way I'm not ever reliant on, you know, someone else's project changing or their feelings changing or anything like that. And, you know, that's kind of how things have rolled out and developed.
Would you be looking at possibly a third edition at some point down the road? I mean, going back on the road. And of course, what you said is, and one of the advice I've always heard about national parks is find a lot of times the local park ranger will say, well, if you come here at this time, at that point to shoot this thing, then you'll get the best light or something like that.
Yeah. So right now I have four planned.
Okay.
You know, I just got this one out. So I just submitted the audiobook yesterday. So maybe it'll come out this week, maybe early next week. I don't know how the approval process with them will go in terms of time, but.
Michael, as a young child, did you with your family do national parks?
No.
Wow. What garnered your interest in it to explore them? Sometimes people say the Ken Burns documentary inspired a lot of people to get out and discover or rediscover the parks.
Yeah, I love Ken Burns. I have not watched any of his material on national parks. But I guess what I'd say is it was convenient.
What do you mean convenient?
Well, I was passing by and the entrance was right there, so I went in.
So your books, are they in the order that you visited these national parks? Or
they are not, actually. They're pretty... okay, so I originally wrote the first two volumes together, drafted the first two volumes together. And when I was doing layout, I realized that, like, functionally, I couldn't put all that stuff together within the amount of time that I wanted to. And so I reassessed and said, okay, these are the closest ones to done. These are what I have worked, you know, maybe they were like the first ones that I went to, or maybe they were just, you know, a visit that I was more interested in writing and polishing. And if I had turned it into a video, then, you know, that was a much more developed visit or whatever. So it just kind of... It turned out that, you know, 9 of the, 17 parks or something like that, that I had at that point in time were in a closer state. So those became the first book, and I kind of put the other ones on hold and then said, okay, I will return to this. And I definitely have a second volume. And then I realized, you know, soon after that, that probably have more, and I have since gone and visited some other places this year, been hitting some parks. So
how long do you spend at each of these locations approximately?
It really varies. You know, sometimes like a drive-through park, you know, I'm just going for the day and doing, you know, all the things that I like. And then other times, you know, I'm there for a week and, you know, really very comprehensive visits or like Isle Royale. I went with a friend and we did a through hike around the Feldman Loop. So we were there, I think, for 5 or 6 days. You know, and each visit is very different. You know, when you're on an isolated island and you only have what you packed in, that looks one way. And if you're staying in an Airbnb in a kind of suburban setting, then, you know, that and driving around and taking your bike and stuff like that looks like a very different scenario.
Are there any projects you're looking forward to outside of the completing the national parks, like things you haven't discussed but like are on the back burner that you're going to move to the front burner?
Yeah, so I earlier this year I kind of landed on the next big idea that I'm going to be working on, so we've started to collect some B-roll for that one. Both me and another guy who is out filming, we're going to take all of next year to continue collecting B-roll, begin drafting an outline for the project, and that might see the light of day in 2024, but I'm thinking probably 2025. in terms of topic, I have not released any of that information. Won't be releasing any of that information until we're much, much closer. But yeah, we you know, there is another really, really big project that we have kind of landed on. But I have these other things kind of that are maybe at the front of stuff, and that's going to be a slow burn. It'll take a long time for that to come out.
So we're about 2 minutes left here and everything. We want to talk about a few other things, but one thing we've been asking our guests, and though it's now kind of in the rearview mirror, is about COVID and how that impacted you both creatively and personally.
It didn't, to be honest with you. I did not slow down at all and turned out everything I intended to. In terms of personally, I guess, yeah, again, really, you know, not to be honest with you, I really, nothing effectively changed for me, you know, I just kind of kept doing my thing.
Very good. Well, we just have about a minute left here. And so, Michael, you have an opportunity to tell us about the websites, about your thing, where they're available, also where people can find you. And I know there's a whole bunch of stuff on Amazon. So tell us all about that.
Yeah, so most of the material is on Amazon. You know, all the books are, the documentary is on Amazon Prime. You can find anything about the Chicago 1893 project at chicago1893.com. You can find out more about me and connect with me or those projects via my website, which is michael-finney.com.
Excellent. And so we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. Michael Finney, full spectrum content producer from the Midwest. And he's brought us a whole bunch of information. You can find his books on Amazon and those websites, especially the 1893 Chicago Columbian Exposition and his beautiful national parks. Michael, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We would like to thank our current supporters and underwriters, which include regional art patron Mary Levan and Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good, and you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.